you have her wired already?
I got some things all over.
Yeah, you're for the podcast.
Yeah,
right. For this room.
Okay. And here, let's do this.
Now, does she have to stand right here? Can she carry the?
No,
it's good.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Good. it's so wonderful to be here and see all of you and see that you came out today and like, wow, this is Monday. How about that? I've been teaching a long time and I've been an artist all my life. I'm from Atlanta. And I think I started to draw and paint when I was about 9 years old. Anybody else start that young? See that? We kind of know what we're doing. And I just had to take this thing out of my mouth because I've been killed by the ragweed. Anybody else having that problem? Okay. All right, so you will, you're kind of hearing a frog in here. I guess I would like to start in early work in 65, when I moved to from Antioch to London to New York. I always wanted to go to New York. And so I think if we have the first slide, which is, these are two paintings that were done. One is Godzilla on your left. And the other is two standing women, and they're the kind of work that I was doing in the early 1960s. So I was, in 65, by that time, Spiral was just winding down, and that was this group of black male painters that had been so audacious as to ask me to join them. I don't exactly know why they did, because I was a kid. And they should have invited people like Vivian Brown, Faith Ringo, a number of older black women artists. But they didn't. They chose a 20-something-year-old babe who'd just gotten out of school and moved to New York. But I didn't care. You know, I didn't know all the politics of why they chose me. So the way I'm painting at this point is one painting a day. So that didn't mean I painted every day. But I wouldn't work on it for more than a day. So what you're seeing is a canvas, or both of them are about 50 by 46, something like that. And they're in oil, so it's wet into wet. And when you see the edge of the paint hitting, say, in the brown legs on the right-hand side painting, hitting the blue, shades of blue and the shades of red, all of that paint was wet. How many of you are studying painting at all? Quite a number of you. So I was very interested in the idea that wet paint could make an edge right at the point where you went from blue to red or red to orange or whatever, that those lines that happen are just the occurrence of the paint mixing with the next color. And so I never had to make lines around paintings, although now I do. I do anything I want to now. But at that point, I was really trying different kinds of things. If you look at the figures, none of them are all the same color. So there's a mixture of colors, and what I was thinking about was my family and how we're all different colors in my family. I'm part Native American, part Norwegian, part African American, part Irish. And my brother is dark brown skin, and my mother, my father, and myself are all sort of peanut colored. But other members of the family are this broad range. And I've always felt that hidden inside of everyone is this range of possibilities. And you never know who's going to come out blue-eyed, who's going to come out with great shiny black eyes. You never know what's going to happen in your family, do you? So it's interesting to me to piece together these body parts and say that we're all related in some way. Here's one that's kind of strange. On one side, we have the members of the group, Charles Alston, Romare Bearden, me. Calvin Douglas was another young artist. And on the left-hand side is this very strange painting of three figures, a very brown-skinned woman. And here I was thinking of Matisse, Gauguin, all the artists that I absolutely loved for their color and their boldness. But look at the other side. The white women are completely nude, and I think I was making a comment that they could take care of themselves in the nude, but the black woman had a little shirt on, and I could imagine that that little black part there that could be her crotch is, no, that's a bathing suit. So I wasn't comfortable making black women naked. Not really. I did it every now and then, but I wasn't there yet. So I was thinking of the politics of what you paint even then. That painting was done in 67. I'm jumping. 1977, that's me on the left. I by this time I had two little kids married, and I invented a show. I'd always been a weaver. I'd learned how to weave when I was at Antioch. And when I went to the London Central School, I decided to take weaving again, but I was also taking etching and painting and sculpture and all the things that you did to come out of there with a degree. But the weaving always struck me as the combination of being a craftsperson and an artist shouldn't be so far apart. I didn't want them to be distinct. So the kids were little, and I wasn't working as a textile designer, which I'd first done when I moved to New York. Well, not first. I taught school for a little while at the Dalton School. But I'd gone to work for this great weaver, Dorothy Leavis. And you can see in the painting on the right that's a portrait of my daughter in oil and a hand-woven piece of mine on the little red fabric, and then a piece, because I didn't believe that you had to do everything loving hands at home, that it always had to be your work, that you could use other beautiful items. And so the blue and yellow is a piece of weaving that somebody gave me. And then it's all set on a hand-woven canvas, which is really kind of stupid, but I'll show you some more of them. Can you imagine weaving the canvas and then painting on it? So you're covering up, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks worth of work when it'd be a damn sight cheaper to just go out and buy that canvas. But I wanted, you know, loving hands at home. I wanted to do the whole thing. It's a good thing I didn't grind my paints, because somebody had told me that that was very dangerous and don't do that, but I would have been stupid enough to do it. I was also a printmaker. Now, when I went to Antioch, I saw etchings, but we didn't have etchings in our department. Do you have a printmaking department here? Yes? No? Yes? Good. Okay. Do take it. You love it. And so when I was in London, that's what I did. And I did mostly etching. So these are done much later, in the 80s. The one on the left is called Santan, and it's in the collection of several museums, et cetera, et cetera. And the one on the right is Pool Lady. And these are from shaped plates. So I cut the plates out. They're not from a single plate, but from perhaps as many as five or six plates that are inked up and then assembled and printed as one thing. It allows you to get very crisp colors. The gist of being a weaver, what happened as a weaver and a painter? Well, I got silly. I started weaving canvases as paintings. So what you're seeing here in these two works, called Kicking Up Heels and Out in Front, is the black with the red stripes on the right. It's pretty much all hand-woven, except I finally gave up weaving the background linen, and I bought that. But then I glued and stitched the hand-woven fabrics to make the artwork. So you can see my hand-woven edge falling off the kicking-up heels woman with the little white hat on the left. And you can see my plaid woven fabric on the right, and the diagonal plaid. What I discovered in cutting hand-woven fabrics is that they fray awfully. So what I figured out to do was to always cut them on the bias so that there wouldn't be torn edges. This one, these are two canvases. Black Dog Blues on the left with the black dog, and Yellow Dog Blues on the right. And what you're looking at, if you look carefully, is that the yellow dog is from a woven fabric, and it's a negative space. And the positive space is the interior for the black dog. So, and you know, that's like, okay, I'm going to cut out a dog, and then I cut it out, and I say, yes, but look at all that wonderful fabric on the outside. And so I get two dogs at the price of one. And that works quite well if you look carefully at the women figures. The woman in orange is cut out of that blue hand-woven fabric, linen fabric, and she is now the blue woman in the right-hand side canvas. And the woman in green is the woman in blue on the other side. So nothing is wasted. I get to use the background and the foreground. And what that does for you as an artist is make you really, really, really aware that the space that's behind your whatever it is you're doing is not negative space, it's real space. It's real space. And I don't know whether you've discovered that in your work as students, but it's something to think about. There is no waste. And once you've woven something that costs you something like, as much as $100 a yard to weave back in those days, now it costs even more to do it because linen is so expensive and yarn is so expensive and your time is so expensive and you have to have the loom and blah, 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 blah. That there is no such thing as throwing away a scrap. How many of you have sewn anything or made a sail or done, you know, any kind of handwork with leather or something where you realize that your shards have got to be used? I think it's just practicality. Here we go. Baseball players. So I'd done all these women, and I decided that I needed power. And who has power? Guys. So for power, I started with ball players, prize fighters, Carl Lewis when he was running and doing the triple, all kinds of athletes. And this baseball series, so you can see the positive side on the left, and then the negative side on the right. Don't waste those cutout bodies. And then the brown fabric at the bottom is a suggestion of the land that they're running on, of the earth. I love the basketball players. And here I was thinking about the prowess that a basketball player has to have. And he's very much like the cheetah he's running with in the left-hand canvas, actually both canvases. That when his legs go out, nobody wants him, you know? And the cheetah running in Africa, when he's running with his pack and he's running too close to a village, they'll kill them all because they're in the way and they don't want them there. So that there's a kind of a date seal on these athletes and animals that I was thinking about at the time I did this, and that's why I put them together. I was thinking of the fragility of the black male athlete, and how if all black boys decided that they had to be athletes, then they've got to a date life like a bottle of milk, you know? They're not going to be good forever, because your bones just don't last, do they? After the athletic series, I started working with water and swimmers. So on the right, you see this beautiful black diver. And I'm painting the same way. So I'm painting a canvas all in one day with everything wet at the same time. No dry edges, nothing allowed to get in the way of the paint flowing, almost like a giant watercolor. This piece, let's see if I can see where it is, oh, I didn't write the sizes. It's about 6 feet by five by 6 feet. Both of them are. And so the upside down diver is, actually I was watching Greg Louganis at the time, and I thought he was just so fabulous. He was an Olympics swimmer and diver, and he was magnificent, but I turned him into a black man because, oh well, does it look good, right? But the other one, the painting on the left, is called Tumbling After, and it has just a hint of disaster. The figure that's tumbling upside down is not such a happy figure, and she is both white in the face and black in the bottom. And it is coming at the time when I was noticing that there was still so much racism in the art world, in the world of sports. And it was just the beginning of a comment also that I began to address in my work about disasters. So this piece of the upside down swimming woman actually went with the black diver. And then on the other panel, we are seeing a football player as Zeus. And I believe that an artist really has to be a great reader. You need to read and make art at the same time so that something is always entering your mind about what you're doing. So Zeus, to me, became a black football player. And he is seducing Leda and the swan. And he is Leda is the black swan. But his real face is upside down in the water. Can you see that? Next. This is an installation. The one on the left, called Take One, is a piece of silk screen and stencils. It's a very simple piece, but I made many, many sheets of paper with that black body called Take One. And it was thinking about South Africa and the horrible riots and things that were going on before Mandela was let out of prison. And I had made this piece with many, many layers of paper, and each like the bust, and then the middle part with her hands tied and the feet tied. Were layers of paper, and it was shown at ABC No Rio in on the Lower East Side, and it said, take one. And when I went to pick it up, it was no longer, because people had taken the whole damn thing. You know, they just took one and one and one and one and one all the way across until there was nothing left. But I still had the stencils, and my printer and I made, I think, three or four more. And one of them is in the collection of the Museum of Modern Art. The piece on the right is an installation called Odyssey. And you can see it. That photograph was taken at the Studio Museum in Harlem, but it was a part of a show that traveled all around the country for a couple of years. And it's a story of me that starts me leaving Atlanta, but starting with a tale on the left, which you can't read, of Zora Neale Hurston's story about from Mules and Men. And this business of reading and having a connection to it and thinking the way the author thinks and having an idea that isn't just something that's just about the three dimensions or the flat dimensions or the whatever, but something that leads you to want to talk back to a writer or to another artist. It's very, it helps a great deal in your work, I think. So this Odyssey piece, I think it's the only one I'm showing here. Let's see. Yes. Tells about from slavery. My grandfather was, grandfather on both sides were slaves. My grandfather, not my great-great-grandfather, my grandfathers were both slaves. One grandfather was a white man on one other side, and one great-great-grandfather was a Norwegian, and there was Native American in there, and so there are a whole bunch of things that I don't know too much about. Anyway. And I was led into the Falling series because of Reagan. I'm sorry, but Reagan just about knocked me out. In New York, I stepped over a person who'd frozen to death on the street right in front of my studio. And I had to call the police to come, and they called the ambulance and they took him to the morgue. But homelessness had never, I'd never seen it, and all of a sudden there was homelessness all over New York. And I was thinking that as an artist I could deal with that. And that was part of the Falling series, was this feeling that I was helpless in the face of this kind of disaster. But I didn't just make black people falling, I made white people falling. And it was when I started doing this, in this canvas with, let's see, which one is it? The Commute and Nothing But Blue Skies, and there are a whole bunch of them. Let's just talk about the one on the right. It has my hand-woven fabric is her red and white dress, and his blue trousers are African fabric. And then there's a target, and it's called, the piece is called Targets. And then there's a rabbit jumping out of a basket. So they're falling through the air, but they're clinging to things. And then in the left-hand canvas, that's windows and curtains, and it's a beautiful woman falling with a kanga cloth, which is this African fabric that's really made for women to wear, or even men sometimes. But what I discovered when I was doing these works was that if I painted the white figure, no dealer, except Alice Zimmerman, would show it. And Alice is here, and she was my dealer in Nashville for quite a while. But I was finding that as a black artist, people did not want to see a black artist do anything other than the black figure, whereas I began to research and discovered that white male artists do, of course, any damn thing they want to. Here again is me falling with a picture of my mother, and I said if I'm falling, I would hold on to something that I really valued. And in the right-hand canvas, it's my daughter, India, because I was married to a white man for the last 40 years, and he just died two years ago. And she's clutching a picture of her grandmother, India. And then there's a little gray suited investment banker, because my son, Nick, has become a partner in Bear Stearns, and he was going through a point where things were not so good in the investment banking business, which is always sort of like that. So, you know, he's holding on to an African fabric with an umbrella on it. A lot of good that's going to help you when you're falling through the sky. But the metaphor of falling has been good. Ooh, I've got two slides of the same thing. But we'll just look at the one on the left. There's a little Wall Streeter clutching the Wall Street Journal and falling backwards, and then a beautiful black girl who's falling forwards and feeling kind of icky about it. Next. And in the midst of all this kind of sadness and feeling down and, you know, what's happening to the world, which we're in again now, no artist can put up with this forever. So you're always doing two or three things at once, I hope, art students. And so I was painting my women artist friends. So what you're seeing there is a big blow up of the Faith Ringgold portrait, and it's a watercolor portrait, and she came and sat for me, as did all these women. And then on the left-hand side, you see parts of The Gift with Joyce Kozloff and Lucy Lippard and Peta Coyne, and you can see the Faith Ringgold picture and Miriam Shapiro and Howard Dana Pendel and just ranks of women artists that I know, and we support each other, and it's really, really great. So I'm trying to give you a range of the kinds of things that I do and how they're all very personal, but I think that they mean something. Now, we're beginning with the kind of low down and dirty. That guy on the left is Lucian Freud. How many people have seen this painting? Quite a number. I thought it was really funny. It's nice to see good old Lucian standing there in his work shoes and his palette and his little saggy whatever. And I was thinking about the privileges of the white male artist, and so I photocopied the Metropolitan Museum poster that they did of this Lucian Freud painting, and I blew it up to exactly, so I'm actually wearing his skin. And I made myself wear his skin, but I could not bear that saggy dick, so I used my husband's, and there I have that, and then I have on fairly decent shoes, and I'm carrying a palette with an X on it, because I'm feeling like nobody cares what I'm doing. But I have a female, and if any of you know Lucian Freud's work, hold your hands up. Okay, good. Lots of hands, lots of hands. He always has his people in that cold English studio. You know, they look like they're freezing to death, and the models must be cold, and their flesh looks awful, and so I allowed my female model, who was completely imaginary, I didn't have one, to look out and say, help, for God's sake, let me out of this woman's canvas. Work suit. And then the piece on the left is me walking a tightrope wearing a Wonder Woman costume and a black lace housecoat and carrying on the hanger the bust of Tiha Amana, who was Gauguin's wife, that he went to the South Seas and bought from her father and gave her syphilis and et cetera, when she was 13 years old. And she's that beautiful girl who's in all of his canvases. So if you look in the corners, you can see the reference to the two women in the corners, in the all four corners of the piece. It's very tiny, but you can see it in the original painting, which I hope you'll see someday. He used her as a model for both of the figures. He used her as the model for almost all the women figures that you see in his thing, because she was free. And then I did a little take in the right-hand canvas on her, that letters, if you've ever read the letters that he wrote to his wife back in France and his children who he'd abandoned to go to the South Seas, he was very much enamored with the whole Manet's Olympia, which you see little swigs of in the corner borders of that fabric. And so he had Tiha Amana lying down on a couch with the same black figure, you see that? That is the negative black woman holding the flowers in the Manet painting. So he is making a reference to someone's work that he admired and kind of admired and also wanted to better. And so I am doing the same thing. And the only difference is that I'm using a little white mannequin, a photograph that I'd taken of some models. And I used white friends. And I put them in black leotards. And it was this feeling of helplessness when I realized that people would really not want a black woman artist to have the power to use the white body. I was so offended by this that I began to subversively work against it. So this was one subversive thing. So when you see that little black X figure, it is a white figure, and it's me saying, I can use the white body when I want to, and don't say that a black artist cannot use the white body, which is what I was being told. Here we go with Tiha Amana. And I really am being a historical sleuth in thinking of how the white male artist has the privilege to use the dark body and to make reference to it, and everybody says, oh, how wonderful, and if I do it, museums don't buy it and people don't buy it, and it's just like, don't do that. So over here we have Matisse's Blue Nude. And he was absolutely looking at African art. Wouldn't you agree, scholars? Yes. And then Tiha Amana with her great evil look on her expression. She was not a happy camper. I mean, how'd you like it if this old guy came over and gave you syphilis? And so I'd started looking at European artists in general and whether they got to use the dark body and the white body. And the answer is, you betcha. So in the scene on the left, we have sort of a Shakespearean thing with a Moor and a white woman naked. And oh my God, that was so titillating to, I guess, a certain kind of art buyer. And then on the right, we have Schmidt Rottluff, I believe it is. The German artist. And then we have Max Slavogi on the left. So we have a black Maasai warrior. Now, what the hell does a black Maasai warrior want with two white women? A Maasai warrior herds cows, not that kind. And then we have Picasso. And I see it in the Museum of Modern Art catalog, which is where I got this photograph from, where they say he definitely did not copy this African mask. Yeah. Bullshit! You think the African copied Picasso? So that head is from Demoiselle d'Avignon. So I'm thinking about the privileges of being the white male artist, you know, really dealing with it and having a good time. I think it's fun to go look in history and see. It gives you ideas to look at other people's work and dig it, you know, and really talk to it and talk back to it. Gilbert and George, they knocked me out. I think they're just awful. I saw them once at, I can't remember the gallery in Soho. They stood around, just thin little boring black white boys, doing nothing, and they still do that. But they use young black boys smiling, and when you use people showing their teeth, that means they're powerless. Did you know that? Royalty never, ever is photographed showing their teeth. You'll never see the queen showing her teeth. So teeth means you ain't got it. So there they are, smiling, begging, please let me alone. In the classic painting on the left, again, shining teeth. Go through your books and see who's painted showing their teeth. Women, blacks, but not white males. You know, when I get mad, I get even. I noticed that a contemporary, Lucas Samaras, in his chair series, he did a series with over 100 of these little drawings of a black man doing something to a white woman. Chair was always falling over. So there were so many of them, and it showed at Pace Gallery, and I said, my God, what was he thinking? What was he doing? Why did he care? Why did he choose a black man to be ravaging a white woman? Make your point, Lucas, for God's sake. But he didn't. So here we have me hiring two Rutgers students. They were married and very cute. And I wanted to see what is the power of the image of the white woman being ravaged by a black man? Why would you go there? So if you take it away, and I know that that's a white couple, you don't necessarily know that that's the white couple because I put him in black. And I tried it. I took photographs of it many times. It's not that it's about art. It's about an exploration of power. Leon Gobb was my colleague at Rutgers. He was a professor there before I was, and we got along very well. But when I saw this painting in his show, Horsing Around, I almost died. The black man with his liver lips, with the white girl, cheap, mind you, cheap white girl, sitting on his lap with his hands down her jeans. She has a bottle. She shows her teeth, which means she's powerless. The black woman standing behind with a bottle in her hand and a cigarette dangling out of her teeth. Make your point, Leon. I asked him. I confronted him rather meekly. You don't confront Leon Gobb. He was a real force and a really nice man, except for that. And he said, you know, you can paint whatever you want. It's what you want. If you want to have the power over the image, you paint it. And I said, yes, indeed. So I then hired white models, and I photographed this situation, trying to see if it had the power that it did. So in the right-hand canvas, those are my photographs. And I made it, turned it into a print with the shrouded black figures on the right. The answer is, after asking that question, if you take the dark bodies away, you don't have the pow that this huge canvas had when you went into a room and it was the only canvas in there. You just don't have it. So he was manipulating the black body to make money. These are two cutout canvases. This is Picasso, my Picasso apron. And around it are the names of all the women he screwed. He did a good job, too. And then some of his heads, and then there's a me head looking at him, and then I actually put the apron on and wiped my hands on it. And then on the right is President Jefferson and its address, and I was thinking about his concubine, wife, slave that he had all those children by, and she was very fair, Sally Hemings. There are real notes about his family sitting down to dinner at the beautiful mansion and being served with a servant behind each person sitting at the table, and they were all his children. So I just thought, okay, make a comment about it. Let's talk about it. Next. And then this multicolored woman on the left with hands and African fabric hands, and she's in blackface, and she's got those little mammy figures stuck around the canvas, and the black gloved hands. Thinking about this thing in 1999, it was an ad run in Vogue magazine for a couple of months of a white woman in blackface, and I said, oh, what's that about? What is that about? Because there, at the time, there were so many fabulous black models that I just couldn't quite get it. Does anybody remember this ad campaign? No. It's only me who notices things like that. So then I continue to think. There's Little Kim. Everybody liked Little Kim. And Little Kim is giving Olympia the eyeball and just saying, what the hell's going on here? And in the other print, it's me holding up a black and white mask, saying the same thing. So I think it's interesting that you can make comments about art in your work. You know, you certainly are free to. Nobody's going to stop you. Doesn't mean they'll buy it, but you can. Africa and Picasso on the left is a quilt. It's a painting bordered with my hand-done quilt fabric. And the painting on the right is Who? Andy Warhol. And it's a kind of homage to wigs and hair. So it's from the Hair series. Both of these pieces are from the Hair series. And I just love the headdresses of the, now who's the artist? I'm just, thank you. Yes, thank you. And then I put in the middle a red weave, because at one point I went and got my hair braided up in Harlem and it was cute and I had them weave red hair, and so I thought that'd be funny. And then I used an African fabric with hair styles all around it. And Man Ray, I always thought Man Ray's Noir et Blanche, which is a photograph on the left, I believe that that particular piece belongs to Sir Elton John. I think he bought it for hundreds of thousands of dollars, that image of the double negative. But he put Kiki of Montparnasse, who was a friend of his, I think, Man Ray, and he laid her head on a table as if she were an object, and then he had her hold an African sculpture in her hand, which was an object, so he was objectifying both of them. And I was thinking about that when I saw this beautiful woman on the subway, and she's the woman that I painted in the right-hand side. She had on her headphones listening to music, and she had her eyes closed, and so I just snapped a picture in my head of what she looked like, and I came home and I painted her, and I made her the black object, and she's making contact with Kiki, and they're saying, neither one of us is objects. So, you know, it's kind of a feminist thing, and it's called Yo Man Ray. Yo.
Yo.
And this is a diptych. It's a big diptych. They're 80 by 63 inches big. And it's right at 1999, about to be 2000, and I thought I'd do a canvas for 2000. So I did a painting of my friend Joanna Tan, who is a Chinese-American investment banker, friend of my son's. And she's carrying a book called The 20th Century on her head. And she's got all of her wishes. She's got a coolie stick that's balancing a Prada bag and baby toys and two little kids, a baby girl in the front and a 3-year-old clinging to her neck, and a really swell-looking gray dog. What kind of dog is that? And little Prada shoes and piggy banks and all kinds of cute things flying through the air. And then on the other side is a Thelma Golden-type character, a beautiful black woman, who's jiggling art. And she's got a mop, so I'm making reference to the stereotypes that we have of people with the coolie stick and the mop. And she's carrying a laptop, and she's carrying a Picasso figure from Demoiselle d'Avignon. And she's balancing the Sphinx. And she's got wonderful books flying through the air, Killing Rage by Bell Hooks, and a picture of Norman Lewis, the great black painter in the blue, and Zora Neale Hurston, and Paul Robeson, and little Thelonious Monk discs. And so it's an homage to contemporary young women. And these are, we're almost there. These are installation shots from a show. The one on the left is the actual installation shot. And the one on the right is a little maquette that I made in the studio before I had the photographs made and printed digitally on this transparent fabric, so that when somebody walked behind the one on the left, you could see that person completely walking behind. And then there's a painting on the wall in that left-hand side. So in the maquette, I didn't actually make it the way I did it in the maquette. I used what I what I had actually had finally in final form had made. But maquettes are very practical ways of seeing if something is going to work or is not going to work. And then this is some very recent work. It's me in the studio thinking about the Falling series and how ain't nothing much changed. Like, we're still in trouble, and we're in worse trouble now because of all the wars we've sort of started. So it's me sitting in the red shirt and my friend Sherry standing in my studio, and on the floor is a rug that I've actually made in Mexico. I'm making some rugs in Mexico. I was a rug designer for Bigelow for many years. And they're my paintings. And then if you look carefully in the blue outline, there's a young boy falling. He's an outline. And up by the white area, there's a little girl falling with pigtails, and she's a red outline. So the falling figures are coming back. I figured that I'd invented them, and in times of hardness, I'm going back to them because things ain't going so well. The canvas on the right was done last year and showed for the first time this year, and it's called Head First. And it's a multicolored figure. She has one light arm and one dark arm and one brown face and one white mask face and one Native American head at the bottom of the canvas. And there's a car on the right-hand side. Can you see the little gray car? With a light, it's lights into the bordered African fabric border, and the three falling figures in the top. And then thinking about the army and wishing that we had the draft and that women could be drafted to do whatever. Great African fabric that I had my daughter go look for African fabric when she was in Paris, because it's one of the best places to buy it. And there is the one on the left part has the airplanes in it, and the one on the right has pointing fingers in a kind of a bow tie thing. And so I'm pointing fingers at the business of all these men dying, and it ain't fair, and we're not all pitching in. The piece on the right is the same general thing, but it was done after the flood in New Orleans, and so we have people in boats and a hand spinning a record that's sort of saying, boy, is this a mess. And there we are. Thank you very much. I'd love to answer questions. Stunned. You're stunned. Tell me what. What's happening? Who has issues with anything that you saw? Speak up. Yes.
I don't have an issue. I'm just curious where you're at in terms of, do men still have this kind of control in the art world?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Women artists, there are more women artists. We turn out more women artists in the art schools than men, every time. And men are still shown more. It's a very hard battle. It's not an even playing field, not by any means. They make more money, they get more expertise, expert advice, more comradeship, more everything. Yeah. Who just died? The wonderful, not Liz Friend.
John Scott died.
Well, no, I was thinking of the woman.
Elizabeth Murray.
And Elizabeth Murray is better than Bryce Martin by 100% as far as I'm concerned. But they're not seen in the same light. It's just, she's a woman. Mm-hmm.
What about the generation that's coming out now, though? I mean, it seems like women are now making as much or more. Well, certainly men have statistically in business. Women who are just graduating 5 years out of college are making more statistically.
I think that that's great, and I'm glad, but we sort of know why that is. You know, I mean, they're really, they're spending more time in college, and guys are feeling a lot of pressure not, you know, to do something else, and they're not spending so much time. And women are not getting married at the rate that they were either. They're becoming, you know, they're really becoming bosses and things like that. They're making more money, but in the art world, they're not. And in the art world, it's a little tougher. So if you're artists of any sort, you really have to look to teaching, and you have to look to having some skills that help you do other parts of your art. So me being a weaver, me being a textile designer, me being able to duck and dodge and do all kinds of things has been very helpful. And I would suggest that you try to make your, you know, explore all those little things that you know how to do and do it. And that goes for guys, too, because the professors at Rutgers that I work with all have different kinds of hustles. You know, they do. You got to do everything. You really do. Yes. The Little Kim piece? I did a big bunch of things with Little Kim. I just thought she was so cute and so kind of ditzy, you know. She's like the equivalent of Marilyn Monroe, but funny. And this was before she had any troubles with the law or any. Let's see if I can figure it out. I may not be able to. I'd have to look at the real slide. I did a lot of things. I did a cute series that guys have bought like crazy because it's so sexy, of cute little Kim-type figures in a long frieze, and they're just adorable. I did a lot of things using her as a questioner. And it made me like her more. You know, I wasn't ever making fun of her. I was just using her kind of smarts and her kind of sassiness and silliness to make comments that I wanted to make. Yeah. And I think that that's your privilege as artist, to be a little bit bad, you know, and a little tricky. Yeah, get in there and slime it up a little bit. Well, you've been great. Thank you very much. Let's eat.
I'm going to try to get a little bit of 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 a little bit of
Well, I was going to ask you, you know, we're bringing Julie Dash here.
Oh,
I was
going to
ask a question about your work in comparison to hers, because I know she talks a great deal about just the sacrifices and the double standards. Yeah, she's
I'm glad you'll be around the Marvin College students. She's really glad.
Thanks for signing up.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm glad to see you.
Well, I hope you get the chance to come by the Black Culture.
Okay. I saw you.
People like Charlie Palmer and Twin and some other fellows.
You didn't say that Tech One is here in Nashville.
That is? Oh.
Where are you?
Oh, that's right. You have it.
Oh.
God, I forgot. What is it?
Now, is there information on your studio in?
My studio is a blessed memory.
Oh, okay.
But I think when I drive through on Second Avenue.
Close 93, yeah.
Yes.
How are you? Yeah, now you hear me.
Yes, I do.
Okay. That's some fascinating stuff.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Hey, you came!
Oh, my God.
He was supposed to find you, and he couldn't.
Well, you know, I got the thing, and I said, well, I won't even bother you when he brought it over.
Can you find Alicia?
Right, exactly.
Thank you.
Well, what a nice surprise.
I really want to see the campuses.
Hers are huge.
I